Welcome to Weaving Trust Podcast.
Hi, I'm Cathy Doherty, the People Navigator, and I help businesses avoid hiring and holding on to horrible people.
This podcast is a space for honest, human-centered conversations about how trust shapes the way we lead, work, and live together. I'm so looking forward to you hearing the stories that each guest has to share. And each episode will be slightly different because as we weave our way through the journey of my guest, we may go off on a few tangents here and there, but that adds to the enrichment of the tapestry that we're weaving. I hope you enjoy this journey as much as I did. Hi, Scott. Welcome to Weaving Trust Podcast. I am so happy to have you here. And before we get stuck in, do you want to give the audience, our listeners, an overview and introduce yourself to them so they know who you are and what you're all about?
Cathy, look, firstly, thanks very much for having me on your podcast. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's fantastic and great to see you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And absolutely. So look, my background of 25 plus years in technology transformation. I've recently launched with my co-founder an AI-based company. So we're not your typical company. All we do is we do AI audits to make sure companies are ready for the EU AI Act if you're selling goods or services into the EU, Ireland, any other part of the mainland Europe. We do AI training for executive teams, and we provide AI solutions based around LEA, which is our own developed technology called Living Intelligent Asset, that allows you to query any information of any question, any kind within a company that you'll take weeks or days to actually find. So that's where we are at the moment.
Thank you. So before we get stuck into the deeper questions, what's something that is either grounding you or joyful or keeping you sane in your life right now?
Well, there's probably a few things, I suppose. One is my two daughters, so it's good to keep them, see them getting on in the world and going through college, both university and together, different universities doing different studies, one doing nursing, the other one doing business. So that's not the piece that keeps me sane. That's the piece that keeps me grounded. what keeps me sane is going to the gym and getting a bit of exercise to keep me energized for what I'm doing and really enjoy what I'm doing. So it's an exciting time. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. So can you share a moment or an experience that has really shaped how you think and feel about trust?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, quite a long time ago when I first moved over from New Zealand.
You're not from here?
Cathy, everyone's got an accent. I'm not Australian and I'm not South African. Yeah. You usually get called South African, by the way. We, even though we've got a better, rugby team anyway, but never mind, we're talking about rugby at the moment.
We won't go down that rabbit hole.
No, might not get back up at the moment. So I guess, probably my first job in Ireland was really, I worked for Vodafone. Someone that really always had my back. It was my first manager, I guess, in the organization. And I knew that, whatever happened, whatever was going on, you could kind of always rely on them. So that really kind of shaped me in terms of my most recent career, in terms of those early days here. Because I had to kind of give 100%. And then I kind of use that now as well myself. So if people are giving 100%, I pretty much back them all the way. So I think that's important, to trust people who trust you. So that's kind of what I live by, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So thinking about as well, the gut instinct side of things, Has there been a time when maybe, you know, trust was actually broken and or you had to rebuild it in your journey so far?
Yeah, I probably an example that comes to mind was people I had on my team, an individual on my team who was probably a little bit unreliable, and I needed people on a 24-hour shift. So they kind of disappeared for a while for various reasons, and had told me that they had been apprehended by the local law enforcement. And that was the reason why they couldn't make it to work. And,
yeah, that would kind of get in the way of freedoms and things like that, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And it was kind of at a push. I asked them, so, you know, would we find your name in the book being registered in there as staying somewhere overnight? And they said, well, no. And, would we, if we asked to see some CCTV footage, would we be able to see you there? And that is, you know, okay. So, right. So we just kind of got to the conclusion that that wasn't the right answer. So trust was put on hold for a little bit there. Yeah.
Yes. And Monique, were you able to rebuild that, or was that a relationship that concluded at some point?
It just unfortunately came to its natural end, it was more, and it wasn't sort of like a manager employee or team member relationship. It was what was more annoying was the effect that had on the team, because they were all there doing their 24/7 shifts, and had to adjust and do different things. But this individual wasn't kind of pulling their weight. It kind of had a drag on the team. So we had to get that resolved. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's nothing more frustrating than if everybody else in the team is doing their thing and somebody else isn't, and not because of a genuine, building up capability. But it doesn't go down well.
No, and it was an exciting time because we had plenty of budget to train people. We were getting them trained and helping them to grow in their careers, and a lot of them went on to do great things. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case for everyone. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So we've all made the mistake of trusting the wrong person. Can you tell me about a time when your gut has said no, but you hired or trusted them anyway? And what happened?
I suppose two different occasions. My gut has said no to a couple of people that I hired. One worked out and one didn't. One had personal issues, and the other one was a flyer, and she did fantastic. So you can be right half the time, and you can trust your gut or AI or technology or tools or whatever you like, but sometimes things work out as expected and sometimes don't.
And I always say that you don't know if it's the right decision until after it's been made and you see the results.
Yeah, 100%. You can do all sorts of stuff. Ask for portfolios and do reference checks, and it's not until the rubber hits the road when you see how things are going to go. Yeah.
And to build on what you, when you talked about the person who had shown you in terms of about, what you think about trust, can you think of someone who has actually taught you something essential about trust and how they did that?
Yeah, I think a person that I had my doubts about, they proved me wrong, thankfully. So I think you've got to give people a chance, and then let them kind of, develop and give them all the support and all the tools that you can to be able to help them to do that. And then the rest is up to them. If they take the initiative, or if they, otherwise it's really up to them. But everyone's got potential. It's just how they use it. And if they're the right person in the right seat.
Yeah. I actually enjoy being proved wrong. it's where you're gut and you go, actually, I'm going to take a chance on that person. And when that is proved right, when everything said don't, you know, but you kind of go, ah, there's just something. I'm just prepared to give them a chance. And when that works out, doesn't always, yeah. but when that works out, it's like a yay.
No, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. And you really want to see people do well. And I'm a pretty positive person as well, you know, much like yourself, and really kind of, you know, hope people do well, want them to do well, and give them all the skills and tools that I can to help them. Yeah,
creating that environment for them to succeed. It's then up to them to actually then take the next step and use all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the opportunities are there, and I know there's a lot of negativity about AI and about fear of jobs and skills and lack of hiring, all this sort of stuff. But I think there's a kind of a key thing is that people need to get engaged. And try and use AI, and if not, get help to get training on AI, because there's what it does. It helps you to kind of do things quicker, allows you to be creative faster, and do a lot of things you probably wouldn't have thought of before. And it comes up with some good suggestions as well. And there's different tools in there in your toolbox for a different job. It's kind of like you don't get a carpenter to build your house with a wrench. You know, it's kind of you got to get the right tool for the job. And by that I mean it's, you know, someone says, "Look, Copilot, fantastic, best tool in the world. Perplexity, Claude, Manus, Lovable, whatever it is. I love that. It's fantastic. It's brilliant." And you go, "Oh, what are you using it for?" And they go, "Yeah, I'm using it for a particular job, to build a website. I'm using it to develop an app or something like that." And it's just about picking the right tool for the job.
Yeah. And I think that's part of your education piece as well, isn't it? Kind of to show people that there's more than just a couple of them out there, that it's not just a case of you've only got a choice of one or two. There's so many of them for the right tool for the right job.
Yeah, absolutely. And it depends on your stage in your career as well. So I gave a talk at Belfast Tech Week last year about the career opportunities and possibilities that are out there for people in terms of working with AI. So it's kind of like the whole lot of new jobs that are out there, and things you wouldn't have thought of before about people who need to be able to introduce AI into companies, to train people in AI. To help people to work alongside AI and do different things. There's a lot of negative noise out there around, coding graduates not being able to get jobs, all this sort of stuff. Well, you know, the thing is that what do people do that code really? Well, they solve problems and they learn how to kind of structure things so that they can get to an answer. And it just happens that they use coding to do that. But if you do that in different ways, they're just problem solvers. So it shouldn't sort of be feared around AI, losing jobs. How can you adapt to use AI to help you in your job? And same goes for accountancy. Same goes for a number of other things around legal. If you are specialized and know how to use those tools in accountancy or in legal. Or other areas, they're going to enhance your skill set and allow you to kind of almost be like a superpower to do things five times faster. And the adoption rates around AI are increasing, but they're not where they should be. And that's about understanding knowledge and training. I think there's a real opportunity for people to learn and kind of power up in what they're doing, because a lot of stuff that you would probably need five people to do before, you do need less people, but there's more roles out there where people can harness those tools and do things. So I think we'll see a lot of kind of people out there with superpowers, as a result.
Well, this leads me on to my next question. So how does trust show up in your work or your leadership?
Yeah, it's really, really good question, because I think, like we were talking about earlier, how trust shows up for me is that the ability to trust somebody to give them a task to do and say, look, this is what I need you to do. If you have any kind of questions or any issues, give me a shout and we can help kind of work through it. But, it's making sure, you kind of set them up for success and say, are you comfortable with this task that you have to do by a certain time? And yeah, do you think you've got the right tools to be able to do that? So it's no point kind of getting somebody to go out and do a sales job if they don't have a laptop or a phone or kind of ability to kind of run certain processes that will allow you to kind of achieve that goal. So it's about setting people up for success, and then you trust them to get on with it, and check in with them, let them to work away on it.
And what then helps you build trust with others, especially in the more challenging moments?
Yeah, I would. Sorry, that was bad timing, wasn't it?
Well, that's perfect timing. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, like, what I think what helps me to build trust is kind of showing up and consistently delivering. So it's kind of like when you're networking, you know, first time sort of someone looks at you and they shake your hand, say hello. And then it's like, yeah, we have to meet you for a coffee. And then, you know, and then actually turning up and saying and actually setting up a date to actually meet for a coffee, and then actually meeting for a coffee, and then having a chat and seeing how we can explore business opportunities, you know, much like we're doing now. You know, probably meet each other probably 6 or 7 times at this stage between different events and online and things. So it's showing up, and it's delivering stuff that you keep delivering, and that's how referrals come as well. So I've, a lot of things I get referred to because they've seen me do things and they're happy with them, or the organization do things that I'm involved with and said, oh, hang on, that's a good, we like what you're doing, it's a good way of doing things, you know. And it, and they start building trust because they keep seeing you continually turning up and doing things.
So what about then, we've got the skeptical CEOs of what AI can do. There seems so much mixed messaging about that, you know, how are you then building trust with them that you can then have the more fulfilling conversations in terms of the possibilities that AI could potentially bring to them?
Yeah, well, there's a few different ways. First of all, education. So, and showing them. So the first thing to do is you need to have a champion within a company who's willing. If you don't have somebody who's willing and kind of wants to do that, you're wasting your time. So they have to be open to that, first of all. And then what I find is we work with the leadership team because the reality is it has to come from the top down because they have the budget, they have the ability to make things happen. And then we tend to train the functional areas of the business, and then there's kind of like onboarding of people then on the general staffing side as well. So it's kind of a three-layered approach. Or if you want to, there's even another way, I suppose, I look at it, which is I call it the AI cake, which is at the top, you've got the board that says, you know, FOMO, we need AI, you know, here's a budget, go away and get AI. And then you've got the CTO or the CEO going, oh, we better do that because our competitors are doing it. And then in the middle, you've got people who've used AI, but they also have the experience as well. So there's kind of a middle kind of knowledge layer within the organization. And then at the bottom, there is the graduates who are kind of bring up the AI slop where they are told, given a task to do. And they go, oh, well, no, I'll put that into ChatGPT, and they come up with an answer. And then your kind of experienced person on the team who's 5, 10 years or more experience says, don't think so. So you kind of got these layers. So you've got to kind of work with the different layers. And it's like any change program as well. You've got to kind of unfreeze old behaviors and prove stuff to people as you go along. So it's not a one-day kind of, as we'd say in New Zealand, sheep dip. And then you've kind of fixed everyone because you've done a one-day course. You kind of spread it out over time so they absorb the knowledge and get more confident and have practice and do things. So, training's kind of one way. There's also, obviously the, an audit needs to be done. The organization, as I was saying earlier, to make sure that they comply with the EU AI Act, because if they're selling any services into the EU, they need to be compliant by the 2nd of August, of 2026. It might slip out in some spaces. There's been updates this week, so that may move a little bit, but it still doesn't kind of excuse you if you haven't got your ducks in a row and things lined up, if you're selling services or goods into the EU.
Yeah, so that's whether you're based in Northern Ireland or Great Britain or wherever, even though you might not be in the EU, you're still covered by the Act.
You can be in Venezuela, Argentina, Mexico, whatever, Canada, and you could be selling goods and services into the EU, whether that be online too, by the way, or whether it's actually physical goods or electronic goods, you still have to comply. So they could get it fined up to 35 million euros or 7.5% of the global turnover.
So, it will happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's easy to trust when things are going well. You know, it's like it's easy to be a good manager when everything's all hunky dory, you know. But how do you handle trust whenever the pressure is on? How do you keep the same levels, or, you know, because it can be easy for things to get messy and for things to slip and for trust to erode when things are more, when the pressure is on. So how do you handle that?
Yeah, well, I think, if I take a fun example, we were building out networks and things like that and not able to keep up with the capacity. So we had to decide whether we're going to let traffic into, as in people to make phone calls in one part of the country or the other. At certain times, so it might be sitting in a telephone exchange at the time to at like 2 or 3 in the morning with an engineer to try and fix stuff. So that pressure, you kind of need to look after people when times are good and when times are tough. So because you're going to ask more when times are tough and when they're under pressure. So it's kind of about treating people good when the times are good and also good when the times are bad. You have to kind of look after your good people.
If it can be easy when the pressure's on to be so focused on whatever the outcome of that is that you lose sight of the people and fulfilling it.
Because they're kind of doing the job and, whether it be fixing a telecoms mast in the middle after a storm or whether it is kind of making sure that the software is working on something and you're charging clients properly. It could be building an app or could be doing anything, but it's making sure that if they're under pressure for a deadline and things have to be done, just sort of treating people in the consistent sort of same way. Because pressure's on, you don't get kind of nasty. You kind of need to just sort of, deal with the pressure and absorb a bit of it and kind of just work with the team.
Let your shoulders get a bit broader when the pressure's on and not let it slip and get and show that it's getting to you.
Absolutely. You're not sort of flipping and passing it on. It's kind of, you got to take a bit of the heat and just kind of work with the team. Yeah.
So is there anything that you do, in terms of any, I've got a hair in my mouth. So start that again. So is there anything that you do in terms of rituals or habits or any of your kind of a belief that you have that helps you stay anchored in trust in either those moments of pressure or moments of doubt?
Yeah, I think it's kind of I don't, apart from kind of making sure that I'm trying to get regular exercise and kind of switching off every now and again. I think that's kind of the key thing. Do like going to the sauna and at the gym and just getting out to sports match or something or watching on TV. So just kind of a bit of downtime, I suppose, and time with the family. So it's really making sure that you have that time out. I think is probably a key thing more than anything else. Yeah.
And so can you think of a situation where trust was tested and what you learned from that?
I had pressure kind of heaped on me in different situations. You just kind of learn, as I was saying earlier, I suppose, whether people can up the line, because everyone's always got a manager somewhere. with it be you're somewhere in the day job or somewhere else. Someone's always kind of looking over your shoulder. So I think it's really the measure of somebody is how, as I said earlier, how they treat you when the times are tough or when the times are good. So a good manager is able to kind of get the best out of the team and reward people for their efforts and kind of recognize what they're doing when they've gone above and beyond. But also it's a matter of kind of dealing with being able to kind of adapt depending on the people that you're working with and their kind of different situations and being respectful and kind of empathetic towards what may be happening because you don't know what's going on in their own lifetime, their own life at the time as you're just a small part of their life in terms of a big part in terms of ours, but a small part in terms of their wider circle and situation.
It can be very easy to be so narrowly focused on the person that you see in that one particular role in their life when it is just one part of their life and you've absolutely no idea, and depending on how well you know them, you don't know how many other pieces there are to that.
Absolutely, because you know they could be a parent, a son or a daughter or a sibling and grandparent, whatever it may be, and they've got many different roles there in clubs and societies and whatever it might be, but it's all kind of the wider circle and wider groups of friends and activities, and they've got to see works a small part of their life.
Mm-hmm. And so thinking about, you know, we can all be so different. How do you navigate trust across all of those differences, you know, in terms of teams or communities or relationships?
Mm. Yeah, look, I think it's about being genuine and consistent. I was saying it earlier, it's just turning up and continuously turning up. So, some of the groups that I'm involved with, I consistently turn up and things sort of sometimes they don't happen until you've been involved with them for a year or two or something like that. And it's also being, I hate this word, but it's authentic. It's so overused. You don't pretend that you're someone that you're not. We've set up a company that is, it delivers tangible results to organizations. So if we didn't keep doing that in the right way, we wouldn't be around. We've recently set it up, but my co-founder and I, he's delivered projects across the US and across Europe. I've worked in all around the world, and it's about consistently delivering things, and people refer both of us on because of what we've done. But the power of it is together is that the fact he's massively knowledgeable and technical. In my commercial capacity, I've been involved with a lot of organizations, multinationals, 6 billion or more turnover, and as well as startups. So I've got the whole spectrum of different organizations and types of people I've worked with all around the world. So that flexibility as well.
And do you think with the international, the multinational kind of experience of building trust and with different cultures and people from all different backgrounds, is there anything you feel you need to adapt to different cultures and customs, or is it the same pillars that are that you find are needed wherever you go?
Yeah, it's the same pillars in terms of being reliable and trustworthy. Slightly different, say, in the Middle East when I was working in Saudi Arabia than it would be in the US, for example. You're pretty pretty clear and communication's pretty, you're told how things are as you stand when you're dealing with your colleagues and different companies in the US. But in the Middle East, it's a bit more, a lot of custom and politeness, and things are done in different ways. And, at certain times of the year, you're doing different things that You wouldn't do in the US that you do in the Middle East. During Ramadan, for example, you can't drink or eat food in public and things like that as well. So local customs, making sure that you adhere to those and be respectful to wherever you are.
And so what's something you've had to unlearn about trust?
I suppose probably coming from a small country in the middle of nowhere, and coming from New Zealand, you just trust people anyway. So what I had to unlearn was to actually not trust everyone, because sometimes you just have to be a bit more perceptive sometimes, because rather than quite open, because the culture where I come from is you trust people and you say, okay, yeah, let's catch up next week for lunch, and you will, or you say, come next time when you're over in New Zealand, come stay with me, and you could say that to a stranger, and people would take that as face value. But if you did that in Ireland or did that in the US, they go, this nut job's turned up at my house.
Yeah, it's the sure, come and stay next time or say hello. And it's like, what, you actually did it? Yeah. I didn't think you'd actually do it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's so it's slightly different. Yeah. Or learning how to not walk around just in bare feet, because that's what you did at home when you grew up.
Well, I walk around in my socks, you know. It's as close as I would get to walking around in my bare feet.
Fair enough. There you go. Yeah.
So if you had to name two or three threads that help you weave trust, what would they be?
I would say, doing what you say you're going to do, and keep turning up consistently, and be there and at things when you say you're going to be, and just delivering. If you say you're going to do something, do it. Yeah, you're not always going to probably be able to do it on time, but make sure that you do what you say you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And then over time, just all these things take time. I've worked with some clients now for 2 or 3 years or more, and in some cases work with other clients for longer than that. But it doesn't happen overnight. You have to kind of build up and sort of do something small, and then they go, oh, okay, that's good. And they keep doing that, and their trust builds up.
And so what do you then do whenever trust feels fragile or uncertain?
Yeah, sure. So I guess when trust feels fragile or uncertain, it's just kind of, I suppose it's kind of prove it. So it's just, it's just evidence of if things feel fragile, I suppose a lot of around communication, you need to over-communicate. If things feel fragile or uncertain, bring as much certainty as you can by, saying, okay, we'll do that, we'll take care of that, and actually do that and take care of it. But also communicate and check in with people and make sure that they're okay, and continuously do that when things feel a bit fragile or uncertain, for sure.
And whenever, do you do something for yourself as well before you then put the effort into, building that up, the fragility and the uncertainty, to try and address that? Is there anything you do for you before you're ready to then try and help others?
Yeah, I think sometimes I practice things and kind of get things clear in my head in terms of what I want to get across in terms of messaging, and making sure I've got kind of my own thoughts clear before I actually talk with somebody who may be feeling, feeling like there's kind of some fragility or something's quite uncertain. So the key thing is kind of do I really know what I'm doing, or am I clear in my head? And a lot of the time it's no.
So how do you get clear in your own head then?
Yeah, I like to draw diagrams, and I find I'm quite visual. So I use mind mapping quite a lot and drawing on whiteboards. So I've got a little whiteboard at home, and I also mind map stuff out. So, and then I just come back to it later, because it's not like you need to have everything solved, the old boil of the ocean, but the more clarity that you can put down in a picture, I find is kind of helpful, and kind of then cements it in my head that I've got kind of a path of action that I want to take. That's the right path. Yeah. Not always works out, but I find at least if you visualize something, then it's more likely to happen.
Do you find it can take you a number of times of the mind mapping if there's that lack of clarity and, you know, awareness of what it is, you know, that you need to find or do or identify?
Yeah, I think it's more, I either do it electronically or use a whiteboard, and I find that's, yeah, being able to rub it out and redraw it's fine, or to redo it on electronically. I find it's you're going to get it like not 100% right the first time. So it could be 50%, 70%, 80%, and then just leave it and come back to it a day or two later. And I think that helps a lot in my mind to get clarity around things, and then, you know, bounce things off, friends or friendly voices who not always going to agree with you, but we'll actually listen and say, yeah, that sounds okay, but what about this or what about that? You know, so bounce it off a few people as well.
So how do you identify then somebody who you trust enough to ask for their input, but they're also going to challenge you enough? How do you find somebody like that?
Oh, like, I've kind of like a group of friends that I can bounce things off. So I suppose probably being an early adopter of kind of at the time Skype and then WhatsApp and all that sort of stuff and Telegram, and so I kind of, it's kind of like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. phone a friend, who's the best one that can answer this question. So I know I give a friend of mine a call in San Francisco, another guy in Sydney, or somebody in New Zealand, or somebody else in Europe. So it really depends on what you're kind of thinking about as to who the best person is to have a chat to. And then failing all that, I've got, it sounds a bit nerdy, but I've got an advisory board that I've set up. And on that advisory board, I have Oprah Winfrey, I have Elon Musk, Barack Obama, and Steve Jobs, and a couple of others. So I've set that up on AI agents. So I bounce ideas off them from time to time as well. And they have quite interesting perspectives. So,
I'm sure they do. I'm sure that there's certainly enough of a variety in there, you know.
Yeah.
So is there a phrase or a quote or a story that reminds you to lead with trust?
I don't think there's a quote, but probably the main thing is that that kind of resonates in my head is that there is there's no one coming for you. So especially when you're running your own business. It's around trusting the right people and working with the right people that you want to work with who are like-minded. Like good people like yourself that are trustworthy and reliable.
I'll pay you later.
It's kind of you relate to people who are similar to yourself who are reliable and trustworthy. And I think that's quite important, because when you're running your own business, you as I say, no one's coming for you. So if you get in trouble, you need to kind of sound out to people that you can rely on and are trustworthy. And that's what I find in a lot of business groups. It's just over time you gravitate towards people that can want to help and help each other and have the right values. If they're kind of all takers, doesn't really work because they'll be happily involved in what you're doing. But if it's one-sided, it doesn't really work out.
So as we move towards the end of the podcast, is there one thread of trust that you hope our viewers or listeners would carry forward?
Yeah, I would say that, be optimistic and trust people and give them the tools to prove you right. Because actually 9 out of 10 times people do prove you right when you trust them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what legacy are you weaving and how do you want it to feel?
What legacy am I weaving? Well, I just hope that people, trust me and feel that they should trust other people and just keep showing up and just keep doing what they're doing. I suppose don't be afraid to try anything new and get out there and learn some new skills. It doesn't matter how old you are and what you haven't done before, but try something different, because once you get outside your safety zone, you'll grow from it.
And so if you were to walk away from your business tomorrow, I know Castaway Eye is still fairly new off the ground, but if you were to walk away from it, what's the one thread that you hope stays tight and what survives without you?
I'd just say consistent delivery. So that's something that survives, is that things still get done and, clients get what they need and they can help that to leverage and grow their business.
And so where can people find you and follow your work?
Well,
not stalking you, but where can they find you?
Castro AI is a good start. So try the website or, look me up on LinkedIn. So Scott Bewley on LinkedIn, or Castro AI, Scott at Castro AI. And then we'll hopefully we can help. If not, have a chat, have a coffee, and maybe give you some pointers that can help your business and help you as an individual. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Scott, for being my guest on Weaving Trust.
That's fantastic, Kathy. Totally enjoyed the experience, and it was great to see you again. And every success to you and your clients as well.
Thank you so much.
Take care. All the best.
Bye. Thank you for listening or watching Weaving Trust podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you hear future episodes. Each episode will have a different guest and we'll be following them on their journey about how trust has shaped the way they lead, work, and live.